good evening. You're listening to Reading the Classics on KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Rebecca, your host for this evening. We are going to be doing part two of our story this evening. It's a condensed version of Barbara Robinson's The Best Christmas Pageant Ever, which Publishers Weekly has called one of the best Christmas books ever. It is being read with permission from HarperCollins, and so we're glad for that. But we'll go ahead and we'll resume in chapter five. If you'd like to hear the first part of our story, you can find that on KRBD's website for Reading the Classics. But let's begin. When we got home, my father wanted to hear all about it. Well, mother said, just suppose you had never heard the Christmas story and didn't know anything about it, and then somebody told it to you. What would you think? My father looked at her for a minute or two, and then he said, well, I guess I would think it was pretty disgraceful that they couldn't find any room for a pregnant woman except for the stable. I was amazed. It didn't seem natural for my father to be on the same side as the Herdmans, but then it didn't seem natural for the Herdmans to be on the right side of a thing. It would have made more sense for them to be on Herod's side. Exactly, mother said. It was perfectly disgraceful, and I never thought of it much. You hear all about the nice warm stable with all the animals breathing and the sweet-smelling hay, but that doesn't change the fact that they put Mary in a barn. Now, let me tell you. She told my father all about the rehearsal, and when she was through, she said, it's clear to me that, deep down, those children have some good instincts after all. My father said he couldn't exactly agree. According to you, he said, their chief instinct was to burn Herod alive. No, their chief instinct was to get Mary and the baby out of the barn. But even so, it was Herod they wanted to do away with, and not Mary or Joseph. They picked out the right villain. That must mean something. Maybe so. My father looked up from his newspaper. Is that what finally happened to Herod? What did happen to Herod, anyway? None of us knew. I had never thought much about Herod. He was just a name, somebody in the Bible, Herod the king. But the Herdmans went and looked him up. The very next day, Imogene grabbed me at recess. How do you get a book out of the library, she said. Well, you have to have a card. Well, how do you get a card? Well, you have to sign your name. She looked at me for a minute with her eyes all squinched up. Do you have to sign your own name? I thought Imogene probably wanted to get one of the dirty books out of the basement, which is where they keep them, but I knew that nobody would let her do that. There is this big chain across the stairs to the basement, and Miss Grabner, the librarian, can hear it rattle no matter where she is in the library, so you don't stand a chance of getting down there. Sure, you have to sign your own name, I said. They have to know who has the books. I didn't see what difference it made, whether she signed the card with her own name or signed the card with Queen Elizabeth. Miss Grabner still wasn't going to let Imogene Hardman take any books out of the public library. I guess she couldn't stop them from using the library, though, because that was where they found out about Herod. They went in that afternoon, all six of them, and told Miss Grabner that they wanted library cards. Usually, when anybody told Miss Grabner that they wanted a library card, she got this big happy smile on her face and said, good, we want all our boys and girls to have library cards. She didn't say that to the Herdmans, though. She just asked them why they wanted library cards. We want to read about Jesus, Imogene said. Not Jesus, Ralph said. That king who was out to get Jesus, Herod. Later on, Miss Grabner told my mother that she had been a librarian for 38 years and loved every minute of it because every day brought something new and different. But now, she said, I might as well retire. When Imogene Herdman came in and said that she wanted to read about Jesus, I knew that I'd heard everything that there was to hear. At the next rehearsal, Mother started again to separate everyone into angels and shepherds and guests at the inn, but she didn't get very far. The Herdmans wanted to rewrite the whole pageant and hang Herod for a finish. They couldn't stand it that he died in bed of old age. It wasn't just Jesus he was after, Ralph told us. He killed all kinds of people. He even killed his own wife, Leroy said. And nothing happened to him, Imogene grumbled. Well, he died, didn't he? Somebody said. Maybe he died a horrible death. What did he die of? Ralph shrugged. He didn't say. Flu, I guess. They were so mad about it that I thought they might quit the pageant, but they didn't. Not then or ever, and all the people who kept hoping that the Herdmans would get bored and leave were out of luck. They showed up at rehearsals right on time and did just as they were supposed to do. But they were still the Herdmans, and there was at least one person who didn't forget that for a minute. One day I saw Alice Wendelken writing something down on a little pad of paper and trying to hide it with her hand. It's none of your business, she said. It wasn't any of my business, but it wasn't any of Alice's either. What she wrote was, Gladys Herdman drinks communion wine. It isn't wine, I said. It's grape juice. I don't care what it is. She drinks it. I've seen her 3 times with her mouth all purple. They steal crayons from the Sunday school cupboards, too. And if you shake the happy birthday bank in the kindergarten room, it doesn't make a sound. They stole all the pennies out of it. I was amazed at Alice. I would never think to go and shake the happy birthday bank. And every time you go into the girls' room, she went on, the whole air is blue, and Imogene Herdman is sitting there in the Mary costume smoking cigars. Alice wrote all of these things down, and how many times each thing happened. I don't know why, unless it made her feel good to see in black and white just how awful they were. Since none of the Herdmans had ever gone to church or Sunday school or read the Bible or anything, they didn't know how things were supposed to be. Imogene, for instance, didn't know that Mary was supposed to be acted out in one certain way, sort of quiet and dreamy and out of this world. The way that Imogene did it, Mary was a lot like Mrs. Santoro at the pizza parlor. Mrs. Santoro is a big fat lady with a little skinny husband and 9 children, and she yells and hollers and hugs her kids and slaps them around. That's how Imogene's Mary was, loud and bossy. Get away from the baby, she yelled at Ralph, who was Joseph, and she made the wise men keep their distance. The wise men want to honor the Christ child, Mother explained for the 10th time. They don't mean to harm him, for heaven's sake. But the wise men didn't know how things were supposed to be either, and nobody blamed Imogene for shoving them out of the way. You got the feeling that these wise men were going to hustle back to Herod as fast as they could and squeal on the baby out of pure meanness, and they thought about it too. What if we didn't go home another way? Leroy demanded. Leroy was Melchior. What if we went back to the king and told on the baby where he was and all? Well, he would murder Jesus, Ralph said. Old Herod would murder him. He would not. That was Imogene with fire in her eye. And since the Herdmans fought one another just as fast as they fought everybody else, Mother had to step in and settle everyone down. I thought about it later, though. And I decided that if Herod, a king, set out to murder Jesus, a carpenter's baby son, he would surely find some way to do it. So when Leroy said, what if we went back and told on the baby, it gave you something to think about. No Jesus, ever. I don't know whether anybody else got this flash. Alice Wendelken, for one, did not. I don't think it's very nice to talk about the baby Jesus being murdered, she said, stitching her lips together and looking sour. That was one more thing to write down on her pad of paper, and one more thing to tell her mother about the Herdmans, besides the fact that they swore and smoke and stole and all. I think she kept hoping that they would do one great big sinful thing and that her mother would say, well, that's that, and get on the telephone and have them thrown out. Be sure and tell your mother that I can step right in and be the Mary if I have to, she told me as we stood in the back row of the angel choir. And if I'm Mary, we can get the Perkins baby for Jesus. But Mrs. Perkins won't let Imogene Herdman get her hands on him. The Perkins boy would have made a terrific Jesus, and Alice knew it. The way things stood, we didn't have any baby at all. And this really bothered my mother, because you couldn't very well have the best Christmas pageant in history with the chief character missing. We had lots of babies offered up in the beginning, all the way from Eugene Sloper, who was so new he was still red, up to Junior Codhill, who was almost 4. His mother said that he could scrunch up. But when all the mothers found out about the Herdmans, they withdrew their babies. Mother had called everybody she knew, trying to scratch up a baby, but the closest she came was Bernice Watros, who kept foster babies all the time. I've got this darling little boy right now, Bernice told Mother. He's 3 months old, and he's so good, I hardly know that he's in the house. He'd be wonderful. Of course, he's Chinese. Does that matter? No, Mother said. It doesn't matter at all. But Bernice's baby got adopted 2 weeks before Christmas, and Bernice said that she didn't like to ask to borrow him back right away. And so that was that. Listen, Imogene said, I'll get us a baby. How would you do that? Mother asked. I'll steal one, Imogene said. There are always 2 or 3 babies in carriages outside the A&P supermarket. Oh, Imogene, don't be ridiculous, Mother said. You can't just walk off with somebody's baby, you know. I doubt if Imogene did know that. She walked off with everything else. We just won't worry any more about a baby, Mother said. We'll use a baby doll. That'll be better anyway. Imogene looked pleased. A doll can't bite you, she pointed out, which just went to prove that Herdman started out mean right from the cradle. Our last rehearsal happened to be on the night before the potluck dinner, and when we got there, the kitchen was full of ladies in aprons, counting out the dishes and silverware and making applesauce cake for the dessert. "I'm sorry about this," one of the ladies told Mother. "But with so much to do at this time of year, the committee decided to come up this evening and set all the tables up. We just hope that we won't bother you." "Oh, you won't," Mother said. "We won't be in the kitchen. You won't even know that we're here." Mother was wrong. Everybody in that end of town knew that we were there before the evening was over. "Now, this is going to be a dress rehearsal," Mother told us all, and right away, three or four baby angels began hollering that they had forgotten their wings. Half the angel choir had forgotten their robes, and Hobie Carmichael said that he didn't have any kind of costume. "Wear your father's bathrobe," Charlie told him. "That's what I do." "He doesn't have a bathrobe." "What does he hang around the house in?"
"His underwear," Hobie said.
I looked at Alice Wendelken to see if she was going to write down that on her pad of paper, but Alice was standing all by herself in a corner, patting her hair. Her hair was all washed and curled, and her robe was clean and pressed. She had even put Vaseline on her eyelids so that they would shine in the candlelight and everyone would say, "Who is that lovely girl in the angel choir? Why, isn't she merry?" I guess Alice was afraid to move for fear that she might spoil herself. "Don't worry about your wings," Mother said. "The main point of a dress rehearsal isn't the costumes. The main point is to go right straight through without stopping. And that's what we're going to do, just as if we were doing it for the whole congregation. I'm going to sit in the back of the church and be the audience." But it didn't work that way. The baby angels came in at the wrong place and had to go back out again, and a whole gang of shepherds didn't come in at all for fear of Gladys. Imogen couldn't find the baby Jesus doll and wrapped up a great big memorial flower urn in the blanket and then dropped it on Ralph's foot. And half of the angel choir sang "Away in a Manger" while the other half sang "Oh, Little Town of Bethlehem." So we had to start over a lot. "I've got the baby here," Imogen barked at the wise men. "Don't touch him. I named him Jesus." "No, no, no," Mother came flying up the aisle. "Now, Imogen, you know that you're not supposed to say anything. Nobody says anything in our pageant except for the angel of the Lord and the choir singing carols. Mary and Joseph and the wise men make a lovely picture for us to look at while we think about Christmas and what it means." I guess Mother had to say things like that, even though everybody knew it was a big lie. The Herdmans didn't look like anything out of the Bible, more like trick or treat. Imogen had even put on great big gold earrings, and she would not take them off. "Now, Imogen," Mother said, "you know, Mary didn't wear earrings."
"I have to wear these," Imogen said.
"But why is that?"
"I got my ears pierced, and if I don't keep something in them, they'll grow together."
"Well, they won't grow together in an hour and a half," Mother said.
"No, but I better leave them in." Imogen pulled on the earrings, which made you shudder. It was like looking at the pictures in National Geographic of natives with their ears stretched all the way to their shoulders.
"What did the doctor say about leaving something in them?" Mother said.
"What doctor?"
"Well, who pierced your ears?"
"Gladys," Imogen said. That really made you shudder. The thought of Gladys Herdman piercing ears. I thought she probably used an ice pick, and for the next 6 months, I kept watching Imogen to see if her ears turned black and fell off.
"All right," Mother said, "but we'll try to find something smaller and more appropriate for you to wear in the pageant. Now, we'll start again and go right straight through, and I think I ought to tell them what his name is," Imogen said.
"No. Besides, you remember it wasn't Mary who named the baby."
"I told you," Ralph whacked Imogen on the back. "I named him."
"No, Joseph didn't name the baby either," Mother said. "God sent an angel to tell Mary what his name should be."
Imogen sniffed.
"I would have named him Bill."
Alice Wendelken sucked in her breath, and I could hear her scratching down on her pad of paper that Imogen Herdman would have called the baby Bill instead of Jesus. "What angel was that?" Ralph wanted to know. "Was that Gladys?"
"No," Mother said. "Gladys is the angel who comes to the shepherds with the news."
"Yay," Gladys said. "Unto you a child is born," she yelled at the shepherds.
"Unto me," Imogen yelled back at her. "Not them, me. I'm the one who had the baby."
"No, no, no," Mother sat down on a front pew. "That just means that Jesus belongs to everybody. Unto all of us a child is born." "Now," she sighed, "let's start again, and why didn't they let Mary name her own baby?" Imogen demanded. "What did that angel do? Just walk up and say, 'Name him Jesus'?"
"Yes," Mother said, because she was in a hurry to get finished. But Alice Wendelken had to open her big mouth.
"I know what the angel said," Alice piped up. She said, "His name shall be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace."
I could have hit her. Imogene squealed. He'd never get out of the first grade if he had to write all that. There was a big crash at the back of the church as if somebody had dropped all the collection plates. But it wasn't the collection plates. It was Mrs. Hopkins, the minister's wife, dropping the whole tray of silverware. I'm sorry, she said. I was just passing by and I thought I'd take a peek. Would you like to sit down and watch the rehearsal? Mother asked. No, Mrs. Hopkins couldn't take her eyes off of Imogene. I'd better go check on the applesauce cake. You didn't have to say that, I told Alice. All that about wonderful, everlasting father and all? Why not? Alice said, patting her hair. I thought Imogene wanted to know. By that time, everyone was hot and tired, and most of the baby angels had to go to the bathroom, so Mother said that we could take a 5-minute recess. And then we'll start over, she said, looking sort of hopeless, and we'll go straight through without stopping, won't we? Well, we never did go right straight through. The 5-minute recess was a big mistake because it stretched into 15 minutes, and Imogene spent the whole time smoking cigars in one of the Johns in the ladies' room. Then Mrs. Homer McCarthy went to the ladies' room and opened the door and smelled something funny and saw some smoke. She ran straight to the church office and called the fire department. We were singing Angels We Have Heard on High when what we heard was the fire engine pulling up on the lawn of the church with the siren blaring and the red lights flashing. The firemen hurried in and made us all go outside, and they dragged a big hose in the front door and went looking for a fire to put out. The street was full of baby angels crying and shepherds climbing all over the fire truck and firemen and all the ladies of the potluck committee and neighbors who came to see what was going on and Reverend Hopkins, who ran over from the parsonage in his pajamas and his woolly bathrobe. Nobody knew what had happened, including the Herdmans, but I guess they figured out whatever it was, they had done it, and so they left. Why in the world did you call the fire department? Mother asked Mrs. McCarthy when she finally heard the whole story. Because the ladies' room was full of thick smoke. It couldn't have been, Mother said. You just got excited. Didn't you know that it was cigar smoke? Mrs. McCarthy stared at her. No, I didn't. I don't expect to find cigar smoke in the ladies' room of the church. She whirled around and marched back to the kitchen. But by that time, the kitchen was fuller of smoke than the ladies' room, because while everybody was milling around in the street, all of the applesauce cake burned up. Of course, the ladies on the potluck committee were mad about that. Mrs. McCarthy was mad, and Alice said her mother would be good and mad when she heard about it. Most of the baby angels' mothers were mad because they couldn't find out what had happened, and somebody said Mrs. Hopkins was mad because Reverend Hopkins was running around the streets in his pajamas. It turned out to be the one great big sinful thing that Alice kept hoping for. Mrs. Wendelken read Alice's notes, got on the telephone that very night, and called up everybody that she could think of in the Ladies' Aid and Women's Society. And she called most of the Flower Committee and all of the Sunday School teacher and Reverend Hopkins. And Reverend Hopkins came to see Mother. I can't make heads or tails of it, he said. Some people say that they set fire to the ladies' room. Some people say they set fire to the kitchen. One lady told me that Imogene threw a flower pot at Ralph. Mrs. Wendelken says that all they do is talk about sex and underwear. That was Hobie Carmichael, Mother said, talking about underwear, and they didn't set fire to anything. The only fire was in the kitchen where the potluck committee let their applesauce cake burn up. Well, Reverend Hopkins looked unhappy, the whole church is in an uproar. Do you think we should call off the pageant? Certainly not, Mother said, and by that time she was mad too. Why, it's going to be the best Christmas pageant that we've ever had. Of all the lies that she'd told so far, that was the biggest, but you had to admire her. It was like General Custer saying, bring on the Indians. Maybe so, Reverend Hopkins said. I'm just afraid that no one will come and see it. But he was wrong. Everybody came to see what the Herdmans would do. On the night of the pageant, we didn't have any supper because Mother forgot to fix it. My father said that was all right. Between Mrs. Armstrong's telephone calls and the pageant rehearsals, he didn't expect supper anymore. When it's all over, he said, we'll go someplace and have hamburgers. But Mother said that when it was all over, she might want to go someplace and hide. We've never once gone through the whole thing, she said. I don't know what's going to happen. It may be the first Christmas pageant in history where Joseph and the wise men get into a fight and Mary runs away with a baby. She might be right, I thought, and I wondered what all of us in the angel choir ought to do in case that happened. It would be dumb for us to just stand there singing about the holy infant if Mary had run off with him. But nothing seemed very different at first. There was the usual big mess all over the place, baby angels getting poked in the eye by other baby angels' wings and grumpy shepherds stumbling over their bathrobes. The spotlight swooped back and forth and up and down until it made you sick at your stomach to look at it, and, as usual, whoever was playing the piano pitched away in a manger so high we could hardly hear it, let alone sing it. My father says, away in a manger always starts out sounding like a closet full of mice. But everything settled down, and at 7:30, the pageant began. While we sang Away in a Manger, the ushers lit candles all over the church, and the spotlight came on to be the star. So you really had to know the words to Away in a Manger because you couldn't see anything, not even Alice Wendelken's Vaseline eyelids. After that, we sang two verses of O Little Town of Bethlehem, and then we were supposed to hum some more of O Little Town of Bethlehem while Mary and Joseph came in from a side door, only they didn't come right away. So we hummed and hummed and hummed, which is boring and also very hard, and before long doesn't sound like any song at all, more like an old refrigerator. I knew something like this would happen, Alice Wendelken whispered to me. They didn't come at all. We won't have any Mary and Joseph, and now what are we supposed to do? I guess we would have gone on humming until we all turned blue, but we didn't have to. Ralph and Imogene were there all right, only for once they didn't come through the door pushing each other out of the way. They just stood there for a minute, as if they weren't sure that they were in the right place, because of the candles, I guess, and the church being full of people. They looked like the people you would see on the 6 o'clock news. Refugees, sent to wait in some strange, ugly place, with all their boxes and sacks around them. It suddenly occurred to me that this was just the way it might have been for the real Holy Family, stuck away in a barn by people who didn't much care what happened to them. They couldn't have been very neat and tidy either, but more like this Mary and Joseph. Imogene's veil was cockeyed as usual, and Ralph's hair stuck out all around his ears. Imogene had the baby doll, but she wasn't carrying it in the way that she was supposed to, cradling in her arms. She had slung it over her shoulder, and before she put it in the manger, she thumped it twice on the back. I heard Alice gasp, and she poked me. I don't think it's very nice to burp the baby Jesus, she whispered, as if he had colic. And then she poked me again. Do you suppose he could have had colic? I said, I don't know why not, and I didn't. He could have had colic or been fussy or hungry like any other baby. After all, that was the whole point of Jesus, that he didn't come down on a cloud like something out of Amazing Comics, but that he was born and lived, a real person. Right away, we had to sing While Shepherds Watched Their Flocks by Night, and we had to sing very loud because there were more shepherds than there were anything else, and they made so much noise banging their crooks around like a lot of hockey sticks. Next came Gladys from behind the angel choir, pushing people out of the way and stepping on everyone's feet. Since Gladys was the only one in the pageant who had anything to say, she made the most of it. Hey, unto you a child is born, she hollered, as if it was for sure the best news in the world, and all the shepherds troubled, sore afraid of Gladys mainly, but it looked good anyway. Then came three carols about angels. It took that long to get the angels in because they were all primary kids and they got nervous and cried and forgot where they were supposed to go and bent their wings in the door and things like that. We got a little rest then while the boys sang We Three Kings of Orient Are and everybody in the audience shifted around to watch the wise men march up the aisle. What have they got? Alice whispered. I didn't know, but whatever it was heavy. Leroy almost dropped it. He didn't have his frankincense jar either, and Claude and Ollie didn't have anything, although they were supposed to bring the gold and the myrrh. I knew this would happen, Alice said for the second time. I bet it's something awful. Like what? Like a burnt offering. You know the Herdmans. Well, they did burn things, and they hadn't burned this yet. But it was a ham, and right away, I knew where it had come from. My father was on the church charitable works committee. They give away food baskets at Christmas, and this was the Herdman's food basket ham. It still had the ribbon on it, saying Merry Christmas. I'll bet they stole that, Alice said. They did not. It came from their food basket, and if they want to give their own ham, I guess they can do it. But even if the Herdmans didn't like ham, that was Alice's next idea, they had never before in their lives given anything away except for lumps on their heads. So you had to be impressed. Leroy dropped the ham in front of the manger. It looked funny to see a ham there instead of the fancy bath salt jars we always used for the myrrh and the frankincense. And then they went and sat down in the only space that was left. While we sang, "What child is this?" the wise men were supposed to confer among themselves and then leave by a different door so everyone would understand that they were going home another way. But the herdmans forgot or didn't want to or something because they didn't confer and they didn't leave either. They just sat there and there wasn't anything anyone could do about it. "They're ruining the whole thing," Alice whispered. But they weren't at all. As a matter of fact, it made perfect sense for the wise men to sit down and rest, and I said so. They're supposed to have come a long way. You wouldn't expect them to just show up, hand over the ham, and leave. As for ruining the whole thing, it seemed to me that the herdmans had improved the pageant a lot, just by doing what came naturally, like burping the baby, for instance, or thinking a ham would make a better present than a lot of perfumed oil. Usually, by the time we got to Silent Night, which was always the last carol, I was fed up with the whole thing and couldn't wait for it to be over, but I feel that this way it was different. I almost wished for the pageant to go on and the herdmans to be in charge to see what else they would do that would be different. Maybe the wise men would tell Mary about their problem with Herod and she would tell them to go back and lie their heads off. Or Joseph might go with them and get rid of Herod once and all for all. Or Joseph and Mary might ask the wise men to take the Christ child with them, figuring out that no one would think to look there. I was so busy planning new ways to save the baby Jesus that I missed the beginning of Silent Night, but it was all right, because everyone sang Silent Night, including the audience. We sang all the verses, too, and when we got to "Son of God, Love's Pure Light," I happened to look at Imogene, and I almost dropped my hymn book on a baby angel. Everyone had been waiting all this time for the herdmans to do something absolutely unexpected, and sure enough, that was what had happened. Imogene Herdman was crying. In the candlelight, her face was all shiny with tears, and she didn't even bother to wipe them away. She just sat there, awful old Imogene, in her crookedy veil, crying and crying and crying. Well, it was the best Christmas pageant we had ever had. Everybody said so, but nobody seemed to know why. When it was over, people stood around the lobby of the church, talking about what was different this year. There was something special, everyone said. They couldn't put their finger on what it was. Mrs. Wendelken said, "Well, Mary, the mother of Jesus, had a black eye. That was something special. But only what you might expect," she added. She meant that it was the most natural thing in the world for a herdman to have a black eye. But actually, nobody had hit Imogene, and she didn't hit anybody else. Her eye wasn't really black either, just all puffy and swollen. She had walked into the corner of the choir robe cabinet in a kind of a daze, as if she had just caught onto the idea of God and the wonder of Christmas. And this was the funny thing about it all. For years, I'd thought about the wonder of Christmas and the mystery of Jesus' birth and never really understood it. But now, because of the herdmans, it didn't seem so mysterious after all. When Imogene had asked me what the pageant was about, I told her that it was about Jesus. But that was just part of it. It was about a new baby and his mother and father who were in a lot of trouble. No money, no place to go, no doctor, nobody they knew. And then arriving from the east, like my uncle from New Jersey, some rich friends. But Imogene, I guess, didn't see it that way. Christmas just came all over her at once, just like a case of the chills and fever. And so she was crying and walking into furniture. Afterward, there were candy canes and little tiny testaments for everyone and a poinsettia plant from my mother from the whole Sunday school. We put the costumes away and folded up the collapsible manger, and just before we left, my father snuffed out the last of the tall white candles. "I guess that's everything," he said as we stood back at the back of the church. "All over now. It was quite a pageant." And then he looked at my mom. "What's that you've got?" "It's the ham," she said. "They wouldn't take it back. They wouldn't take any candy either or any of the little Bibles. But Imogene did ask me for a set of the Bible story pictures, and she took out the Mary picture and said that it was exactly right, whatever that means." I think it meant that no matter how she was, Imogene liked the idea of Mary in the picture, all pink and white and pure looking, as if she never washed the dishes or cooked supper or did anything at all except for have Jesus on Christmas Eve. But as far as I'm concerned, Mary is always going to look a lot like Imogene Herdman, sort of nervous and bewildered, but ready to clobber anyone who laid a hand on her baby. And the wise men are always going to be Leroy and his brothers bearing ham. When we came out of the church that night, it was cold and clear, with crunchy snow underfoot and bright, bright stars overhead. And I thought about the angel of the Lord, Gladys, with her skinny legs and her dirty sneakers sticking out from under her robe, yelling at all of us everywhere, "Hey, unto you a child is born." Thanks for joining me tonight.